The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn.
Go.
More time to read. There's dusty fields. No,
this is Waylon Jennings. Look, listen to this for a minute.
You may change your mind.
Where corn don't grow.
The weeds are high. Where corn don't grow.
And where corn don't grow, that's going to be a very difficult situation for farmers in the Midwest, for consumers across the country, for livestock companies, for grain companies, and it could potentially hit the whole world. 2 weeks of drought in the Midwest, and what a difference it has made. This is what we're talking about now for the next half hour. And this portion of the Hayes Advantage is brought to you by TotalTaxInsight.org. Do you want to know all the various types of taxes you pay throughout the year and estimated amounts of each? Now you can at TotalTaxInsights.org, a public service of the American Institute of CPAs. Joining us now, a very special guest, John Corey, who is Managing Director and CEO of Prairie Mills Products. John's going to tell us a lot about his background and how he came to own this independent grain processor. Let me preface by saying that he went to Chicago. He was in the financial services industry at Drexel Burnham. He was a bond trader. He was in private equity. And what a time, John, to find yourself firmly ensconced now in the agricultural business. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
So tell us a little bit more about who you are, the farm kid who for a while didn't follow those farm footsteps, but went into the financial services industry instead.
Well, in the 80s, agriculture went through a very challenging period of time. And I at the time, my background was farming, and I also was in a commodity trading, and I went to Chicago as a commodity trader. And I also realized that one of the biggest bond market bull moves was probably getting ready to occur, and so I ended up going into the banking business. And that began a 20-year career in the banking world.
Oh, and I also want to reintroduce Stanley Crouch is with us, Aegis Capital, where he's Chief Investment Officer. John, we invited Stanley to join us as well. He's on the show today because he has dived headfirst into this story and what's going on. Tell us more about Prairie Mills, this company that from your private equity perch you bought, you went into the business, what it is, where you are, what you do.
Prairie Mills is a small independent niche milling company. We're what's called a dry miller of corn products, and we're based in northern Indiana. It's a 110-year-old company that I bought about 7 years ago. And we've been very successfully growing the business over the years. We've got a geographic reach from New York City to Chicago and all the way down to Cincinnati and Louisville, and that's our focus of our market. Yellow and white corn is the market we serve, and we're somewhat of a niche player in the land of giants. But we have a very nice little business, and this year has been obviously an interesting adventure for all the people involved in the corn trade. And, you know, the pie is seemingly something that we're going to have to kind of fight over, who gets what piece.
From being out there, can you describe to us what the fields look like?
Well, last week on Thursday, after the 4th of July, I drove from over towards Fort Wayne, Indiana. When you go 40 miles to the west of Fort Wayne to about 40, 50 miles east of Fort Wayne, as an example, the corn is knee-high, waist-high, in most of the places, and trying to tassel. And that's just so amazing to witness anything like that. And when you walk out in the fields where you do find corn that is tasseling, what you often find is that it's not, you might see pollen, but there are no silks. Or you might see silk, but the tassels aren't ready to drop. And so you've got corn out of sync. It's so stressed, it couldn't function. And in 105 degree weather, the pollen that did drop, it generally would not survive the heat if it landed on the silk. So the last, when I was traveling over in Ohio and eastern Indiana, I just couldn't believe the amount of damage that was occurring right in front of my eyes. And also just the sheer size of the area that we're dealing with. When you go into southern Indiana and across southern Illinois and come back up and through Springfield and Decatur and back into Indiana towards Indianapolis, it is just extraordinarily dry. And as I've talked to traders and merchandisers, you know, pretty much around the eastern side of the Corn Belt, east of the Mississippi and to the south, we really truly have a problem.
So what, tell us a little bit more about what the what prices have done, what they're likely to do. One of our faithful listeners, Timothy, who follows agricultural commodities, and well, commodities of all kinds pretty closely from up in New Hampshire, said, you know, Popo focused so much on corn, but soybeans are potentially a big issue too. And yes, they're more resilient, right? They're not as, they maybe could get some water down the road and come back. He said this has the potential to be a big part of the problem as well.
Yeah, what this is a domino set of events. You know, what has occurred in the last 10 days to 2 weeks when you materially affect half of the corn crop because it didn't properly pollinate, you now have a chain reaction event. Corn is a ubiquitous commodity. It's in all the foodstuffs, and it's in many, many things that are even not food, more industrial-type products. But what happens is that when you take a look at the pie, you now have a situation where in the ethanol production, which consumes a significant amount of corn in the U.S., the byproduct of ethanol is DDGs, distillers dry grain, which is a high-protein product. And that product is a feedstuff that it goes into animal feed for fortifying the protein needs for diets and livestock, particularly cattle. And it has replaced a lot of the soybean meal that historically was always there before ethanol. Well, now that the DDG market is going to probably diminish somewhat, what we're now going to find is that soybean meal's got to pick up the difference. And so that's going to produce a real demand on the soybean crop that already has quite a lot of global demand already on it. So we've got a domino effect in many, many products. You have the sugar market that's clearly going to be affected. Corn is used in production of sugar, high fructose sugar. And as the price of that continues to increase, then you're going to see other sugar substitutes become more relevant, and so, you know, 22-cent sugar may likely go into the mid-30s before this is over. I think you're going to see a lot of different price pressures put on different ancillary commodities across the board.
John, it's Stan Crouch. I was interested in your former life as a commodities trader, the price action, because we've seen this incredible, almost parabolic rise, about 30% from the end of May. What do you foresee in the volatility?
Well, you know, if you've looked at the market today, you could just, you know, it's just breathtaking to witness what we're watching. You know, the active trade is so dramatic, and I think that's the word you've got to look at, that we're in a period of high drama. And so the high-frequency trades, the quant funds, and then just the commercials are kind of competing for space.
John Corey, we're going to continue this conversation. Trading, the prices, this is such an important aspect. Coming up next on Bloomberg Radio. So Stanley Crouch, Aegis Capital, is with us. John Corey from Indiana, Managing Director, CEO, Prairie Mills Products. A bond trader, a commodities trader, a private equity guy 7 years ago purchased this independent grain processor and is now in the thick of this agricultural, gosh, what do you call it, John? I don't want to call it a crisis. It's not a crisis yet, right? But it's certainly a problem.
It is. And, you know, right now, the best word I have is it's kind of a mess. We're trying to figure out where we're going to end up as there's still, you know, a few weeks to go. And the Western Corn Belt is somewhat a wild card. They actually planted their crop a bit later than we did on this side of the Mississippi. And they basically are, over the next 5 to 10 days, still pollinating. And so if there is a chance that they can get rain, we might actually see some relief, at least on their side, that might actually help out. But having said that, I will say Iowa is very dry, and the farther north you get, the wetter it seems to be. But, you know, we really do have some issues. You know, this weekend it is supposed to rain, but the problem is, you know, that's kind of an issue that really doesn't matter because the pollination just didn't quite work out. So we've really got ourselves in a situation where the 15 billion bushel corn crop that we thought we were going to have, to get back to Stanley's point about price action, one of the things that we thought we had going into the month of June was not only one of the biggest crops that had ever been planted, but also one of the finest crops that had ever been planted. It was planted well on time. It was, in many cases, in advance. The soil conditions were excellent, and the crop stand was outstanding. And as we got into May, the rains became fewer and fewer, and the stress became higher and higher, and then the hope in June was we'd get some relief, and in many cases, it never happened. And so as that began to show up in some stress before pollination, it really began to cause some concern, and correspondingly, the market began to, in the last week with 105-degree weather, it had to react. We shifted from a 15 billion bushel corn crop to something down to 13, and in many ways, there are fears it might actually go down towards 11.
Sure, John, you bring up a great point of a negative surprise. So my question to you, because you're definitely on the inside and would be able to describe for the audience this, the impact that I cited where the federal, state, and local governments have significant fiscal impact or liability on this issue is, I think, pretty profound if we start doing the extensions. So can you describe, as you see it, how all those levels might be impacted if this is really a wipeout?
Well, you've got all kinds of issues that are going to be triggered here. At the federal level, you have federal crop insurance, which this is going to be the largest claim that they've probably ever had. And the bill on that is going to be quite significant because they're the backstop on all the insurance. And then at the local levels, you've got incentives and programs that are at risk now, and there's a lot of coordination that's got to take place. You know, when you get right down to the front line and you go really to the heart of the heartland and you go on some of the livestock farms, probably the most vulnerable part of all of agriculture over the next 6 to 8 weeks is going to be the hog farms and the poultry operations and the dairy and the beef cattle operations. These guys are really going to be on the front line of change. And because the forages have really been short, the water is low, rivers are as low as they've been in years. So we really have not only a farmer problem at that level, but it's going to also show up with, you know, some of the government officials. How do we deal with these issues? Well, money's not going to solve the shortage of water. Money's not going to solve the shortage of food. And, you know, it's not a crisis as we see it yet, but, you know, at the same time, we've got issues we've got to sort out. How do you reprioritize this pile of corn? How do you reprioritize who gets it? And, you know, the market obviously is going to do its best, and that's what you'll see in terms of Chicago pricing and in terms of basis. And the basis is going to be probably one of the wildest years we've ever seen. And after ethanol came, corn typically would trade at a discount to Chicago and most central Indiana places. And then after the ethanol turned on the switch, corn went to a premium over Chicago because we had to import corn from out of state. And we're going to find the drama of that basis take new directions that we may have never seen. And I think that a lot of corn that's out in the West is going to have to move east. A lot of livestock is going to have to be relocated. And much like the Texas drought, you saw cattle move to the north. And now you've got a drought on the Front Range that's having cattle, you know, actually being liquidated. So we've got a livestock industry really under deep pressure.
We're speaking with John Corey, Managing Director, CEO of Prairie Mills Products. What are you telling your customers?
In the process here, be wide awake. You know, eyes have got to be wide open here. We've got to make some decisions. And, you know, we've got, fortunately, a lot of our supply established in the forthcoming months, and I think we're in pretty good shape. But, you know, when you get into the 2013 year, it's real important that we are price sensitive, and we have to make sure that they understand we're going to be in a new price regime, and it's going to be interesting to see how high things have to go before you get some equilibrium and some rationing.
What about China? What about Brazil? What about the countries? I guess there's two groups: some that are also agricultural exporters, some that are big agricultural importers.
China has been a wild card the last couple of years. They've had some real weather problems, and as they've had weather problems, they're also in a significant campaign to grow their animal agriculture and the protein content of their diet. So they're expanding that area very rapidly, and so they've got a huge demand on corn and on soy products. And when they were growing in the face of this drought that they had to actually import to supply their needs. Well, we ended up being a core supplier to China in these last couple of years. And my friends that just got back this weekend from over there are saying that some of the weather pressures are coming down on China. They think the crop actually may be a little bit better, so the demand problems that they imposed maybe last year on us may not be as brisk, and activity may not be as much. So we need to look at that. Now, South America, has had their own set of weather problems, particularly this last year. But recently, in their winter crop and corn in Brazil, they've had plenty of rain to the point where they actually are going to have a decent crop there. So I think that South America is going to continue to play a real important role going forward. But weather just seems to be an issue clear around the globe. And I think farmers, whether they're in the U.S. or in other countries, one of the things I've learned about farmers I've traveled around the globe is they're an inventive, resourceful, and very aggressive type of individual entrepreneurially to try to solve problems. So I think, this is going to test everybody's wits, but I think people can rise to the occasion.
John, you bring up weather, which is obviously critical. I've heard reports, and even directly from some farmers, that are starting to blame global warming potentially. And going into our hot political season, no pun intended, that makes for some very strange political bedfellows. I'd say generally farmers tend to be a pretty conservative lot. So how do you see the arguments for the climate change playing into things and policy and into the election season?
Well, I think that the reality is the climate is changing. And I think a lot of farmers, when you really visit with them, honestly, they recognize that, whether it is a microclimate that they have around their farm, or it's a regional sort of thing. I think a lot of farmers are actually recognizing that as to what causes it. I think that's a great debate on that subject. When it gets into the politics of some of this, it's a hotly contested battleground of ideas and where policies may need to go and what people ought to do. But I think in the end, the farmers just are of the view, we've got an opportunity to grow a product and, give us what we need and we'll get it done. So, they're pretty much a can-do group of people, but they're also realists to say that the weather is changing. And, I had a guy that at a conference that gave a very good talk about one of the phenomena presently the last couple of years is the fact that nighttime temperatures have risen so much these last 5 years, it's just staggering. You just can't believe what's happening across the Midwest with nighttime temperatures, which changes the agronomic aspects of crop growth.
So there is definitely so much being stirred up by this debate. John, thank you so much for joining us today. Really
sure.
Appreciate it. I hope I'm sure we'll have you back soon because clearly the story is a big one now and it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon.
The drama continues.
There you go. John Corey, Managing Director and CEO, Prairie Mills Products. So from the corn shortage, potentially, to the FOMC, the Federal Reserve releasing the minutes of its last minutes just moments from now. That's what we're taking up next. We've got Bob Eisenbeiss, former Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. Chris Rupke from Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, starting right now to get the minutes from the Fed, analyze them, and react.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012, Bloomberg LP.